to the My Amazon Guy podcast. If you're listening to this, it's because you're searching for more information on how to best sell on Amazon. My name is Stephen Pope, and I'm the founder of My Amazon Guy. And we're an eight-person digital agency focused on increasing sales on Amazon. We've helped more than 150 brands launch and improve sales on Amazon, and we've learned quite a bit along that journey. But learning is kind of a difficult thing to do, realistically. And that's kind of why I'm starting this podcast. There's a lot of information out there. There's information overload, distractions. You know, when I was trying to figure out how to get a mic set up to shoot this podcast, it was a very frustrating process. I started Googling, what does PewDiePie use for a mic? Well, I ended up buying this nice Rode microphone, and then I got it in the mail, and I opened it up, and I realized I didn't have the right cord to plug it into the PC. So I went out and researched some more and watched five other YouTube videos. And lo and behold, I had to buy four extra parts and this thing called Phantom Power and this other item that connects it from one device to another to control the audio and then finally end up in the PC. Pretty frustrating process. I've never done it before. I didn't have somebody here at my office showing, telling me how to do it. And I had to troubleshoot that. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably been in that fight against the chaos monster, trying to learn what to do to move forward in life, move forward in business. And not only do you have the complications of trying to combat the newness of it, you're dealing with your own life battles, distractions, family, politics, information overload, trying to figure out what source of information is the right place to go. And quite frankly, the longer I've been in business, the more information ignoring I've been doing. And I've been making more gut decisions. And I realize it's probably a mistake to some extent. And, you know, I try and go back to the mentors and try and poke them and say, hey, what am I doing wrong? When you're successful, it's really hard to find advice from other people. They take one look at you and they say, why do you need my advice? You're doing great. And I guess myself, I've always been trying to figure out, how do I take it to the next level? How do I increase upon what I've already done correct? How do I get righter, better? And that's the journey that I'm on. And, you know, I run a wildly successful agency. I'm going to talk in this particular podcast, I'm going to talk about my background and kind of a little bit of my life story, because I want to set some inherency for the viewer and the listener on why you should listen to me versus all of this other information out there. I'm not claiming I'm going to be your single source of information, but what I am suggesting is that I'm going to be different in a lot of ways from other sources of information. Now, obviously, I'm biased. I am peddling my own agency services. You know, we have active 65 clients that we help grow sales on Amazon. And I'll talk about that. But I want to go back a little ways and discuss, you know, what I've been through, my journey, my learning journey, if you will. I think knowledge is really and information is really the theory versus the practical knowledge application to actually go execute. And, you know, I've got a YouTube channel with more than 100 videos answering technical questions with tutorials on how to do stuff within Seller Central. There are dozens of topics that I'm literally the only person on the entire internet that has a video on it. I know this because clients tell me my video was the reason that they found the answer to their source of information that they're looking for. And then they get on the phone with me and it leads to a client or a business or a coaching session. And I think that the difference between what I'm going to do in this podcast versus what I do in my YouTube videos, though, is my YouTube videos have a really big technical aspect to them. They're straight to the point. In 3 to 5 minutes, here's exactly how to do something. Here's how to change your seller name on Amazon. I'm like rank one in Google for that. how to do XYZ in Seller Central. This podcast is going to be tutorials, but mixed in with storytelling, inspiration, lengthier diatribes on how to move the needle selling on Amazon. Because one simple video on how to go do something in Amazon is going to help you for 5 minutes get past your challenge, but it's not going to help you increase your sales from 10,000 to 20,000. That is for sure. So it takes a lot more to make the right decision. And I've been out there listening to other Amazon podcasts. You know, Helium 10's got a good one. The Amazing Seller's got a good one. They have a lot of content out there. There's a lot of good information you can find in them, but the longer somebody's got a podcast up, the more likely that they, you know, aren't. They've already told their story. They've already really got out there and said their piece. And so I'm new to that, and I've got a different story to tell. So let me dive into that. So I went to Weber State University to get my Bachelor's of Science in Communications. I mentioned the background all the way back to this spot to help you understand my perspective. So I went to school to be a television reporter. And I loved being a television reporter, but I hated working for the news industry. What a dying industry that is. Awful, awful industry. E-commerce on the other side, what a growing industry. What a fantastically growing industry. I'll talk about how I made that transition and why. Obviously because the new industry was bigger and growing and there was less competition, but a lot more to it than that. So when I was at college, I joined the debate team. That's how I paid for my college. It was on scholarship. And I learned how to argue and articulate and communicate. But you know what debate did not teach me is how to be persuasive, how to convince somebody of something that they did not believe in, or how to take them from their viewpoint and shift it to my viewpoint. That was not part of my education. If I had to go back into college and do it over again, I would learn how to be persuasive. I think that would be the most beneficial skill I could possess. And the reason why I say that that skill is so powerful is because I've spent a decade of my career telling people why they should do something in their business. Whether I was the peon, new guy in the room, I still had a bright idea. I said, hey, let's go focus time and attention over here. But because e-commerce is such a shifting thing, and the television industry was such a dinosaur industry dying, much of my viewpoint fell on deaf ears. I never really was able to take an organization and shift them from one view to another. I was able to go in there and launch things and make sales. I was able to go in there and execute to my best of ability, but I couldn't persuade the organization to really change. A lot of people like change. They don't want to lead it. I loved leading change. I'm a little bit more burned out on that question now after attempting it so many times. You know, I talked to many successful entrepreneurs who try and go and change organizations that they're in, and it's really not possible. It's basically my conclusion. It is not possible to get hired at an organization unless you're the CEO. And even if you are the CEO, good luck getting that board to follow what you want. Persuasion is not easy. It really is not easy. And I would love to get better at that. So when I was in college, I debated everything from corn subsidies to healthcare and everything in between. My claim to fame, I beat Harvard's B team in a debate and surprised my own debate coaches. That was a lot of fun. There's a movie out there where a small college, black African-American college, in fact, beat Harvard's A team. And, it was very much like that. I didn't get any praise for it. There was no movie shot, obviously. And, you know, after that tournament, it never came back up. So it really didn't impact my life whatsoever to beat Harvard's B team. But it was fun. It was definitely fun. The way I beat them was on a technicality and a cheap shot, actually. They were supposed to read their plan text on why you should vote for affirmative, and I was the negative, and I had borrowed their plan text before they spoke, and they forgot to read their plan. How do you forget to read your plan in debate? That's probably in the top three cardinal sins in college debate for sure. And it's topical to business too, because if you forget to read your plan to your board or forget to tell everybody in your organization what you're thinking, good luck executing it. Now, you know, in a college debate, it's an hour-long ordeal. And obviously in business, you know, the next day you can reset and tell them what you're thinking. But at the time, that's how I was able to win. Now, there were many, many other college debate tournaments and college debates that I did that I won on real substance and issues. But that's the one I remember, and just because it was Harvard's B team. After college, I went and became a television reporter. And I did that for a few years. And again, I love being a television reporter. You get to go out and do so many fun things. I flew in a stunt airplane with Greg Poe. I've interviewed Dawn Wells. And if you don't know who Dawn Wells was, she was Marianne on Gilligan's Island. Big throwback for you. Very funny person, by the way. And well into her 70s, gorgeous woman. I met Fonzie at the Yellowstone Airport, in fact, when I was covering President Obama, visiting town. And, reflecting back to some of those times as a television reporter, you know, I get a little bit of goosebumps thinking about it. And when Fonzie, you know, he gets on the camera with you, immediately starts telling jokes about M&Ms on Air Force One. I don't remember the joke. That's typically how it goes, right? You're in the moment, but funny guy. When the airplane took off after we were covering Obama's visit, I remember the wind gusts shooting us with small rocks and damaging my camera and hitting me and pelting me in the face. Fun times. Sometimes when I was a television reporter, I was able to go out and go fly fishing and clear the cobwebs for a day, go on a hot air balloon ride, and enjoy that for the moment in time. Most of the time, though, it was a grind. I'd go make up stories. I'd go get on my beat, stop by the police station to try and figure out which idiot criminal did something stupid that day. I did not like building relationships with the police. I did not like checking in with people to, you know, basically massage their egos and talk to the captain and hey, please give me some information you're not supposed to give me so I can go make the 5 o'clock news. I hated that part. I was in the middle of a big argument between the mayor and a city council person covering that story, and man, were some feathers ruffled. Not once could I persuade anybody on television what I was doing was going to change their opinion, I don't think. It was entertainment, probably at the most. After I was a television reporter, I went back, you know, I basically got fired at my last reporter job. I was going to quit anyway. That's what they all say, right? But I, you know, it was pretty much the only job I ever really got fired at. And I had decided to quit 2 weeks earlier. I was in the middle of a blizzard in Wisconsin, 10 o'clock at night, covering a live blizzard in the middle of the snow. My hair froze over. My teeth were chattering. I missed my cue for my camera guy. And man, did I look like an idiot staring into a camera for 20 seconds. I didn't even know I was on television. What an awful ordeal that was. And it was at that moment in time, big moment in time for me, I said, what am I doing with my life? Why would anybody want to go outside in this blizzard and do something at 10 o'clock at night when everybody else in town, everybody else, was home in their pajamas doing whatever they wanted to, or sleeping, or sipping some hot cocoa? I had made a decision at that point I was going to get out. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know where I was going to end up or what I was going to do. But I had made the decision. And then a couple weeks later, I ended up getting fired because I just couldn't integrate into that particular television market after doing it for a couple years over in Idaho. So I went back to school and I picked up an MBA and did that at Western Governors University. It was a competency-based model, really good for me in particular. And I did that very quickly. And the moment I had the MBA in hand, I just started job hunting for a job in marketing. I decided over that course of that year transition, I was going to get a job in marketing. I ended up in an e-commerce business for the first time in my life. And my first job title was a marketing manager. For those that are familiar with the ecosystem or org charts of e-commerce platforms and organizations, a marketing manager is not an entry-level gig. I had pitched an idea. I was in over my head at the time in that particular role. And I was pitching ideas on how to engage in this new thing called Facebook. I bought likes for 2 cents a like, well before the Russians or anybody else was selling likes. So these were probably just advertised American likes, and when you could get them that cheap, 2 cents a click, 2 cents a click like, if you will. And I built an audience. I built it up to 100,000. So in succession, I worked at four failed startups in e-commerce. Four failed startups. Within 90 days of each of those four failed startups, my boss transitioned. In three of the four instances, they left the company entirely. And I was upgraded above my capacity to run a small marketing department in all of those instances. Again, I really wish I had that persuasion tool because the new cat on the block saying this e-commerce thing's taken off. We need to go sell on Amazon. What? This thing, Amazon? I'm starting to talk about Amazon for the first time in my podcast here. Yeah, it was a thing when I was part of beta testing PPC, sponsored products in Amazon. I was first to market when maybe 100 companies were doing it at the time. And in my second year, I was still getting 2 cents a click rice cooker ads that I was able to produce. We were selling merchant fulfilled at that time with sponsored products and items flying off the shelves, growing to 300K a month years ago. Now, those startups that I worked at failed for one reason or another still. And in one instance, I worked for the British. And they had a really successful restaurant equipment business in Britain. And they came to the States and they tried to run the same business the same way. They just thought, oh, we'll just print money. That was not going to work. Yeah, there's this thing called coupons. What's a coupon? Well, the British called them vouchers. It wasn't a trash can, it was a rubbish bin. And that was just the start of the problems. Not to mention the fact that the United States was, I don't know, seven times larger west to east, and you couldn't 2 day ship, let alone 4 day ship at that time, successfully from the East Coast to the West Coast. I was on the East Coast at this point in Maryland. And every business I've been in has made, in those failed startups especially, has made some critical mistakes. They ignored something critical and then failed and they had to reinvent themselves, or they fired a division, or the company just went out bankrupt altogether. One of the successful places I landed in my e-commerce career, I was a marketing manager at a company called APMEX. That's the American Precious Metals Exchange. They sell gold and silver coins. So I was really successful growing their SEO there. And if you went to SEMrush right now and typed in Atmix, that's Alpha Papa Mike Echo X-ray.com into SEMrush, and you could basically guess where my hire date was because it's so obvious. It spikes so quickly on my hire date from the time I started there. I only worked there 1 year to the day. It went up 10 million uniques, SEO traffic uniques, to the website. Now, despite having that dramatic success, I still felt like I struggled to persuade the organization to make changes, to adopt, hey, I've got this proof in the pudding. Come do what I'm saying. Double down with me here, guys. Let's go grow this even further. Let's go Let's go build the number one education system for all things precious metals on the entire internet, and let's make a Wikipedia out of it. That was kind of my stick at the time. Content was king. Well, now content is not king in the same way. For every one piece of blog content out there, there are 7 blog articles. I might have got that stat backwards, by the way. Might have been 1 to 7, 7 to 1. Pretty much the same anyway. For every one YouTube video, it's like 700 to 1, and for every one podcast, it's like 10,000 to 1. So content, you know, and the competition for podcasts way lower. Very difficult to rank your content nowadays within Google because most of the important questions have been answered, and there are content pieces that are sometimes 10,000 plus words long with all kinds of answers to it. So at some point during my e-com career, I started side hustling, and this demand question kept coming up. How do I increase my Amazon sales? So over time, I took on these retainers and started helping people and said, hey, here's what I would do if I was going to go Amazon sales. And at the time, it was BFBA and keep your stuff in stock and a lot of core messages that everybody knows at this stage if you're in the game. And optimize your listing and make sure you got A-plus content and your titles need to be lengthy and make sure your search terms on the back end aren't the same words you have in the copy. All of those basic things. So I got a ton of referral business. Well, I always had this idea that I was going to sell on Amazon myself. So I started my own business. I started selling wine glasses. Got a business to a 500K first year we ran. But the profit was like $30,000 on that 500K expenditure, which is insane. $30K, $500K. Really, it is really hard to be profitable on Amazon. Really hard. Amazon's going to be a 33% partner to your business. Very difficult. I have a lot of ideas on what I want to do for some podcasts to cover how to be effective in increasing your sales on Amazon. I'm going to talk about everything from how to register a trademark. Make sure your brand name is a good brand name. How I think Amazon's entering the maturity phase, the complexities in selling on Amazon, and what's the impact of that. Back to that maturity phase idea, just to make sure you help me understand what I mean by that, is it's no longer just simply show up and sell. It's demanding in many new ways, and they're putting up roadblocks. So we'll talk about how to overcome some of those roadblocks. I'll talk about, if Amazon went away as a channel for you, what would you do? Go to eBay, Walmart? Think you can make that work, your own website maybe. I'll have a podcast theme about what, if you get to 1 million in annual sales, then what? How do you get to 2? Not a lot of easy answers on that one. A lot of people have already covered product research. A lot of different ways you can do that one. I'll throw my hat in the ring there. What about the risks? A lot of suspensions. A lot of risks. Detail page removals. What do you do about those? How do you prevent them to begin with? Can you be proactive in protecting your business? Probably my favorite one that we're going to do, though, I'm going to have my wife join me, and she is going to just rail on me. And the theme of that one's going to be, what's it like to be married to an Amazon seller? And the jokes write themselves. I won't spoil too much of it, but man, don't we do some crazy stuff when we're selling on Amazon? And doing this out of our garage, side hustling, the things that we do and our spouses and our family put up with, man, there's a lot of things that we put our families through to make it happen. Especially if you got a full-time gig and you're doing this as a side hustle. God bless, Godspeed, man. Not easy to do. Then some of my podcasts are going to be more tailored to the corporations out there. What's it like for a wholesale company to go to retail on Amazon? That's actually my bread and butter. That's usually where most of my agency clients end up being, because we specialize in taking people who already have a good product and showcasing it and growing and building that traffic. Everything boils down to traffic and conversion. And that's how you improve your sales. I've got a lot of mantras. Another one I'll say is, if if you want to improve your sales on Amazon, there's four ways you can do it. You can sell more products to more people more often for more money. It's a Harry Joyner quote, by the way. He's the guy that owns ecommercerecruiter.com and ecommercejobs.com. And if you're trying to find an e-commerce director level expert, six-figure sort of employee, he's the guy to talk to. Very top in class, owns the niche market on how to do that. He's best in class. So I'm trying to be best in class on helping, as an agency, be practical, execute, and growing sales. And typically speaking, there's usually two feedbacks I get on why people like working with my agency. And it's because, number one, we share all of our trade secrets. I'm going to be super open-ended on my podcast. You're going to be able to copy everything I do and duplicate it. And I'm okay with that. And you know why? It's because you're going to go tell three other people. And that's going to lead to business for me. I think agencies, in a nutshell, have really got something backwards. They think that whatever they've learned how to do is their intellectual property. And just pay them money and they'll go do it for you. I think that's the wrong way to run business. I think that if I empower you as a business and teach you and show you, not only are you going to be happier with me, you're going to go tell three other people. Now, do I think you can execute it at my level? Probably not. Should you pay me money to go execute for it? I think you should. But there's going to be many out there who can execute it at 20 to 30% of what I do and still make a buck. There's going to be others out there that will get closer to 100%. Good for them. But I still think that they're going to come back and share my message and share it with others, and that's okay. The second reason why I think people like working with my Amazon guy as an agency is because we're pure executors. I have interacted with a dozen agencies this past year, six of which went under, and one of them even had a picture shaking hands with Jeff Bezos right on the website. They still went under. And it's because execution is so critical, getting stuff done. I don't leave my house anymore, guys. And that's that's embarrassing to admit, but I don't go to conferences. Why? Because I could probably give the conference at this stage, and most of the messages at the conferences are trying to shove down sales pitches for buy my technical product, buy my, you know, hire my agency. So I go to the conferences back in the day mostly for the networking, and that's really the best thing. Get another group of sellers. I don't know if I believe in masterminds, I'll be honest, but you're going to get better insight from other sellers in your exact same shoes than you are going to get from many other people who claim to have that knowledge. Now, I have access to over 100 seller accounts. I'm going to see some themes. I'm going to see things go beta before everybody else. I'm going to know what's coming. If use a hockey metaphor, it's not where the puck is today on Amazon. It's where it's going to be that you got to be ready for. If you're not ready for the changes that are coming on Amazon, you're going to fold. And if you're not ready to learn, obviously I'm preaching to the choir here. If you're listening to this podcast, you're ready to learn. But if you're not ready to learn, and I'm talking about the other guys out there, let's point fingers, you're probably better off selling your business right now. Go sell it to the mature organization who's got more technical prowess and can bring everything together and combine and specialize. Because if you don't, you're not going to be able to compete. Private labelers have pulled a fast one on corporations because they were willing to go the extra mile to optimize for the platform called Amazon. And corporations are still, they're like, hey, this Amazon thing's important, but I don't know if I want to pay attention to it. People just buy from my website, right? Wrong. If you're not on Amazon today, you're irrelevant, right? And that's because if you go down to the store right now and you're trying to buy a mic to go run a podcast, what are you going to do? You're going to go on Amazon, read reviews. Yeah, sure, there's a bunch of game reviews out there, a bunch of fake reviews. I get it. But nonetheless, how else can you do research these days without having some qualified source of information? That's also why when I started to try and figure out, you know, how I was going to buy a Rode mic or whatever mic I was going to get for this podcast and how to learn all that, I went to Google and started asking questions. You know, what are the top people that do podcasts, top people that do streaming, what are they using? I'm going to go copy them. Because you don't need to go drop $5,000 or $10,000 on some information product out there to learn how to learn. You got to put the time in. Should you get slapped in the face a few times and try and figure out mentality on how you think is different. You probably need to, honestly. You know, Sam Ovens, great guy, great content out there. I felt like he's very theoretically well-read individual as he's talking about information and how to rethink and reshape. But if you go watch one of his live webinars, I felt like it's lacking in substance. Somebody asked a question, he's like, well, you just got to try it and see what happens. And I get it. Okay, execution's king in my book. I'm a big guy on execution. I hate talking theory. I like practical application. Here's exactly what you need to go do right now to go make a difference. Beta display advertising is a big topic right now. I've got about 10% of my accounts have access to retargeting within Seller Central. You can actually target past purchasers now. Now, everything that's in beta usually kind of sucks on Amazon, to be honest. Most of the beta programs are terrible. They're broken UIs. They don't track. They don't work. Nonetheless, we still test every single one of them, and on occasion, we find a winner. Video ads on Amazon right now, definitely really hot subject. I think that those are something, if you're going to take action today, go get a 15 to 30 second video ad clipped and build it for Amazon. Should it have audio, voiceover? Absolutely. Should have audio and voiceover. Man, that's a top question I get on video ads. Should have, always have somebody talking about your features, your product. Music is not sufficient. Just having a little bit of music in the background, not sufficient to have music in the background, guys. You gotta have something more than that. But, so I hope you join me on my journey. Thank you for watching or listening to. I've been shooting a lot of videos, can you tell? Thank you for listening to the Stephen Pope My Amazon Guy podcast. If you need any Amazon consulting, go to my Amazon.